Happy Easter. As Andrew mentioned in his reflection, Easter is the highest holy day of the Christian calendar and a day of rejoicing and celebration. Today, we are also in the middle of some of the most sacred days in the Jewish calendar, Pesach or Passover, when Jews remember and celebrate their freedom from slavery in Egypt. All of us ministers and staff at the fellowship are working from home these days, but are occasionally going into the office to do a couple things that can only be accomplished there. Reverend Leah shared this picture of our empty sanctuary earlier in the week. She said that the sanctuary is patiently waiting for our return. And then I stopped by yesterday and I decided that our lonely pulpit needed some love. So I hung this brand new banner that was handmade by one of our members, Mary Gerlach. And even though we can't be there to enjoy it in person, I wanted you to see it. And I wanted our pulpit to get a little springtime makeover. It's a little hard to rejoice right now. I want to. Easter is my favorite holiday of the year, even more special to me personally than Christmas or Halloween. But it just feels a little empty this year. I dyed some Easter eggs on Friday night with my 4-year-old Nevin. It was fun, but still, it's all so weird right now with this worldwide pandemic and the very real anxiety that people are feeling, fear for the economy, for their own livelihoods and finances, for the hospitals and their overburdened system, for the lack of personal protective equipment that our medical professionals have, for the healthcare outcomes that are, as always, disproportionately worse for people of color, and that is still being borne out again in this pandemic. It's okay to feel scared and worried, stressed and lonely. All of these feelings are normal. I try every week with you to share some words of wisdom and some calm reassurance, but please don't think that I have it all together. I have my moments of exhaustion and stress and heartache too. So how on earth are we supposed to celebrate in a time like this? I want to share with you a little bit of a reading, actually a decent length of a reading from the Reverend Kendall Gibbons, who is a UU minister and a humanist scholar. She writes, quote, "The sane and real thing to do right now is to be grief-stricken and afraid, knowing that the world will never be the same. Easter morning," she writes, "was like that for Jesus' disciples. It would take decades for them to work out what the reality of the empty tomb would actually mean for them personally, for the world, for the future. At first, the rolled back stone and the missing body was just one more indignity, one more complication, one more heartbreak to deal with. Amid all of their other disappointment and grief, were they not to even have the simple comfort and closure of seeing him properly buried? The world as they had known it, transformed by the possibilities of healing, justice, grace, and freedom, blessed by God's loving compassion, evaporated as their teacher gasped out his last breath on the cross. And yet, Reverend Gibbons writes, it is the confusion and anguish of that disappearance, that inexplicably empty tomb, that the first whisper begins on the lips of the brokenhearted women trembling at their own audacity. Risen? What if the story isn't actually over? You might recall that we are focusing this entire year on a theme of healing and wholeness, that we are focusing on healing our bodies, our spirits, and our world. And right now, we are in the midst of a short theme on healing religiously. Many Unitarian Universalists came to be a part of our communities by having either never been a part of any religious community or having left behind a different tradition. Some of us come to this Unitarian Universalist faith having been hurt or harmed or disillusioned by our religious past. My hope is that we can be a community that helps people heal and find their own spiritual wholeness in this faith, not being asked to accept any particular religious beliefs, but neither do we have to wholesale reject them. We can find new meanings, new truths in old ideas. The early Christian church did not look anything like it does today. There was no organization or structure. There was no agreed upon orthodoxy or belief system. The early followers of Jesus were Jewish. They were a part of a Jewish group that was hoping for a Messiah, a savior, one that would overthrow the earthly oppressors, the Roman Empire, and bring the reign of God to earth. Now, I want you to imagine being in their shoes just for a moment. You're following this man, this teacher of peace and justice, hoping that he will rise to power and become the new king. But what happens? He's arrested by the authorities and killed in one of the most painful and humiliating ways possible, by crucifixion. Those early followers did not have any understanding of the crucifixion or the cross as people do today. There was no belief in salvation from the cross. All they could see and all they could foresee was that their Messiah had died, had failed to bring about the future that they were all hoping for. And then, a few days later, the women went to the tomb to retrieve his body so they could properly bury it, and it was gone. The Gospel of Mark says that there was a man in white, an angel, who said to the women, "Don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead. Look, this is where they laid his body. Now go and tell his disciples that Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there just as he told you before he died." The gospel ends with the women fleeing from the tomb and telling no one. Mark is likely the earliest gospel that was written, and the earliest versions of the Gospel of Mark end right there. No physical sightings, no great commission to the world, just the women fleeing and telling no one. The story could have ended there. To tell you the truth, if I had been one of those early followers, I would probably have given up, heartbroken and despairing right then and there. Everything I was hoping for, gone. But what happened was truly the miracle. Whether or not the physical resurrection of Jesus actually happened, I have no idea. But what happened next was that the followers gathered. They continued to share Jesus's message of peace and a community of radical inclusion. Their hope became transformed from an earthly overthrow of earthly oppressors to a hope that Jesus would imminently return as a heavenly Messiah and bring about the kingdom of heaven on earth within a few decades. But that didn't happen either. Rather than give up, though, they just continued to transform their hope to, over time, closer and closer to what people around the world celebrate today, the resurrection as a spiritual triumph over death. Now, if you're hearing this story of the transformation of the Christian message over the centuries, and you're feeling the urge to dismiss it as a myth, or people just making stuff up as they go along, I understand. And I want to challenge you to dig deeper in the spirit of healing religiously. This story is like the one that we are facing today. We are like the early Jesus followers in a time of uncertainty, fear, and despair. What will come next? Will it ever end? I met on Zoom with some several fellowship folks, about a week or two ago, and we were exploring Lent and the stations of the cross. And we talked about hope in the context of this story. One of the participants in that group spoke honestly and said, "Yeah, it's easy to see the Easter story and say we know the end of the story, so we should have hope. But I can't see the end of this pandemic possibly ending well, so it's hard to have hope right now." This is absolutely real. It's hard to have hope right now. But hope is not the same as optimism. It's not the same as getting what we want or wishing for something and imagining that it's going to come true. God is not a birthday cake. God is not a genie in a lamp, and we don't always get what we want. The early Christian church had hope, but that hope was not anything what they had originally envisioned. It was not what they originally wanted and prayed for, but it was still hope. There are two kinds of hope. Finite hope, which is limited, and transfinite hope, which is expansive and all-encompassing. We are accustomed in our lives to trying to have finite hope. I hope this will go well. I hope this thing will happen. But this pandemic is inviting us into an exploration of transfinite hope, hope beyond what we can possibly imagine. Let's go back to the words of Reverend Kendall Gibbons. She writes, "Here's the thing. The essence of Easter is about transformation. It's never about things going back to the way they were before. The new life of spring is new. It's not last year's leaves. Those are over and done. Even the empty tomb of the gospel," she says, "is not a sign that Jesus and his entourage are going to resume their former life. In fact, that way of things is finished. It is only a radically new understanding of how to be a community together that can save them from dissolution and despair." End quote. Passover also reminds us that the life that came after bondage is not the same as the life that came before. After the Pharaoh lets the Hebrew people go, they wander through the parted Red Sea, out into the desert, not for a day or two, but for 40 years, an entire generation, before they come to the land that they will call their own. They wander, worried that they are lost, grumbling constantly about the lack of food and the blandness of the manna that God provides, even as they are grateful for it. It wasn't an immediate relief to be set free. But the traditional Pesach song says, "Dayenu," which means it would have been enough. It would have been sufficient. If God had brought us out of Egypt, Dayenu. If God had provided for our needs in the wilderness, Dayenu. If God had only given us the Torah, Dayenu. But God did all of those things and more, and for that, the Jewish people celebrate, even though it wasn't the hope of what they had originally envisioned. We have no idea how or when this COVID-19 pandemic will end. We have no idea how many lives will be lost, and for that, we despair. How can we celebrate today? I said at the beginning of this sermon that it just feels a little empty. Well, so did the first Easter. It was literally the emptiness that triggered the message of Easter and the message of hope, of the triumph of life. The tomb was empty, and it could have meant the end of the story, anxiety and fear. Our fellowship building and so many other places in our communities and our nation are also empty. But rather than that emptiness being a sign of anxiety, we could interpret it as a sign of hope, a sign of care and love for each other. It is an absolute miracle that our nation has managed to cease the movement of so many people so quickly. We could still do better, but wow. The unprecedented closures and stay-home orders have been a deep disruption in our social lives, but it has been a miracle that none of us could have even predicted being possible 2 months ago. The emptiness is a sign of life, a sign that we are choosing to save lives, to minimize the danger to at-risk populations, to give our medical system a fighting chance, and for that, we celebrate. The angel at the tomb said to the women, "Do not be afraid. He is not here." We, my friends, we are not there. We are not at our building. But do not be afraid. We are still here. We are beyond the walls of our space, inhabiting the world and continuing our community in ways that are just as real as when we were there, even though I know we wish we could give each other a hug. On this Easter Sunday, in the midst of Pesach, may we look to the future with hope. Not optimism, not empty wishes for a future that resembles the past. Last year's leaves, last year's flowers, those are gone. But new life and new hope is possible as we look to each other and look to the emptiness that is truly a sign of life. May it be so. Amen.